Hello, this is John Galloway.
And this is Jesse Liberty.
And this is the Full Stack Videocast, a pair programming experiment where we build out a full working application spanning from server to web and phone and everything else in between, while you watch.
Hi, John.
Hey, Jesse. So we're continuing our two-part series on getting data to and from, or communicating between our web server, which is hosting our data, and our phone client.
Right, and what, just to make sure that we're on the same page, what we're doing is we've stripped down to a dead simple server and an incredibly simple client that we're going to build right now. But let's just review what we said about the server side very briefly.
Right, okay, so we're using Entity Framework Code first for our data access. And so that, in order to do that, we write a very simple class. So we've created a class to hold a person object, and it's just got an ID and a name. And then Entity Framework Code first creates a database for us, and we've got some seed data there, which we're using for testing. Then we're exposing that data using WCF data service, and we've talked about what we need to do in order to make that both read and write. And then that exposes a feed, and that feed is it's XML, it's using the OData protocol, and what that allows us to do is there are client libraries, which we'll be getting into in a bit here. There are client libraries which will know how to read that data, how to query it and all that on the phone, and then also it's able to accept changes back into the WCF service from the phone, pushing them back all the way into our database.
Great, great. So what we're going to do now today is we're going to go over to the client side of this, and the first thing we're going to do is go to the Open Data CodePlex site and get data service util, which is used to create the proxy on the client. We'll go ahead and create that proxy, make a new Windows Phone databound application just so we get that list box for free. That list box comes with some bindings. We're going to change those bindings. You can see that here. We'll go over it again when we get to the code, but basically what we're going to do is change the item source to bind to the object itself and the two text blocks to bind to properties, public properties, that we're getting from the server. All of that, and we'll set two-way binding, all of that will allow us to do two-way binding locally, but and to get data from the server, but if we're pushing data back to the server, then we're going to have to do a little bit of work to get the data context and push that data back to the server. Now, I should clarify right away because I misspoke. We're going to need that data service context in any case, even just to get the data from the client, which
That's right.
will load asynchronously.
Sure.
Okay, so let's do that. Let's begin. And I think the first step, the very first step, is to get our server running. So let me bring up Visual Studio 2010, and I will just fire up Dead Simple Server here, which provides that seed data that you were describing, and run it. And what that's going to do is actually open up a browser window and display that data for us. It also tells us what port we're operating on, which is 49786. And we can see there's three. We've been messing with this and making sure that it works. So we've got three random names as our seed data at this point.
Yep.
In the database. Okay. Step number two is to go get the latest data service util instance. And the way to do that is to go to, I believe it's odata.codeplex.com.
Yeah, that's correct. And while you're doing that, let me talk about why. There is a data service util that ships with Visual Studio that you would think you'd be able to use, but since Windows Phone came out after that, this is kind of an update for that, which is going to it's got some nice things like a data service collection, some things in there that we'll be looking at soon.
So. Okay, great. Okay, so let's go down to OData Client Binaries Code Gen Tool for WinPhone.zip, and we're going to take that, agree to the terms, and save that file right in my H directory just to have a place to put that zip file. And with that in place, we can go to that directory and we can unzip that into its own directory. And that directory now contains the latest data service, util.exe, and it also contains the DLL that we're going to need as we go forward.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so now using the shortcut that you, in fact, showed me, I'm going to hit shift right click, and say open command window here. And that beautifully opens a command window right where we want it. Now, data service util, the best way to see what this is and how to use it is to first give it the question mark command. That, as is typical of many command line, will provide all the options. And do you want to read them out while I do the typing here? That'll probably be a little bit more.
We'll type data service util. And then the first parameter, you can put them in any order, of course, but we'll do out colon, and we'll give it a name. We can call it personservice.cs. Okay. Next, we'll do slash URI colon. And the URI, that's the service URL, so that's going to be our dead simple server running on localhost.
And we need the port number. Do you happen to remember that, or I'll go get it?
I don't remember it.
It's quite all right. We'll go over here. It's port number 49786. And then following that, we need to have the service name, which is person-test-data-service.svc.
If we knew how many times we'd be typing that, we may have gone with a shorter name.
That's entirely possible.
Yep. Okay, so next we'll do slash version colon 2.0. And finally, we'll use we'll do slash data service collection.
Sorry, I got a little ahead of you there.
Yep. And what that does, that's going to create a proxy that uses these data service collections, which are kind of these smart updating collections that you can bind to and have iNotify property change and all that.
Okay, hitting enter, and we asked for the output on that to be a .cs file, and so there it is, personservice.cs. So we can say that we want to open an Explorer right here, or we could have returned to the Explorer we had. There's personservice.cs. I'm going to copy that onto the clipboard and then start up a new instance of Visual Studio to create our client. What we want to do with the client is create a new Windows Phone data-bound application. Okay, so let's call it OData_Test. It's a Windows Phone data-bound application. As soon as this settles down, we can come over to Solution Explorer and paste in the file that we have on the clipboard. So we'll just come here and click paste, and personservice.cs is now included as if we had done add an existing object and looked for it in the Explorer itself. So that is now part of our project. The other thing that we need to do is to make a reference to the DLL that we unpacked from that zip file. So let me go ahead and do that by saying add reference, and we can browse right to that directory and pick up system data services client.dll and add that in, because we're going to need that DLL to make use of that service. With this in place, let's make sure that this builds before we do anything else. Okay, and I made the classic mistake, and in fact, I'm going to leave this in. This is the classic mistake to make, which is let's delete that DLL, go back to the zip file, and what I didn't do was to unblock that. So what we can do instead is go in there and delete these two DLLs, which are not in the right state because the zip file wasn't unblocked. Now let's go ahead and unblock that zip file and try that again by unzipping two the same folder and say that we don't want to replace data service util, but we do want to go ahead and replace the DLLs. Okay, so now we come back to the references and say add reference and go to our client and add that into the references, and let's try building that again. And it comes up and says that it's perfectly happy, which is great. That's just what we want. So the first thing, as we mentioned, that we want to do is to change the binding on this list. So let's come down to the list box, and we see the item. So let me reformat this so that we can see everything a little bit more clearly. Okay, now our list box, we can see that the item source is binding to items. We're going to take the word items out and make it just binding, and that says bind to the object itself. Secondly, we've got binding to line one. We need a property, a public property of our data object. And so what we're going to bind to instead is, I believe it's first name. Do you happen to remember?
It is.
Okay. So let's go ahead and make that first name. And I believe we have a property called ID. Or is it person ID?
I don't remember that one.
Okay, that one I can check very quickly.
The easiest way would be in your browser. I believe it's got the list there.
Yeah. The easiest way would be if I could get to my browser quickly. There we go. It is ID.
It's ID and
it's
name. I lied to you.
John, and I trusted you. Okay, so we're going to say name, and we're going to say binding to ID. All right, and in addition to having set it to the two public properties, name and ID, we also want to set the mode, which defaults to one-way, that is read-only. We want to set that to two-way. But having a text block that is two-way seems a little bit goofy to me because you can't update a text block. What we really want there is a text box.
Mm-hmm.
That will allow us to do two-way binding by just typing in the new value. So let's take this text block out and replace it with a text box with two-way binding. Okay, that's now in place. Being ever cautious, I'm going to build to make sure that we're okay, and we are, and we're ready to go to the code behind to do some implementation here of the changes that we need. One thing that we want, however, is to make sure that we have a button at the bottom that is a save button so that when we click on that, we can write the data back to the database.
The reason we need that, you've got the two-way binding, so you're binding to the collection, so we're always keeping that collection in sync, but then we actually need to call back to the service and say, and submit our change back to the service, and that's what that button will be for, right?
That's exactly right. And so what I'm going to do is put in a middle row, and then that will allow us to put the list box into the middle row and put our button into the final row. So we now have this list box with its data template in the middle row, and after the list box itself, I'm going to add a button, so that's after the internal grid even, we're going to say that we're going to have a button that we're going to place in there called save, whose contents will be saved. Let's take a quick look at that and make sure that that looks something like what we expect. Reload the designer. And if we scroll down, we do see that good size save button. And of course, I would clean this up if this were production code, but that's fine. I'll have an oversized save button. It'll be just fine going forward. So let's save that file and go to the code behind for this file and start building the logic to support both reading and updating of the database. In order to do that, we're going to need to have a context, and we're going to create a person context by taking the URI of the person test data service that we used earlier in data service util. I know what the problem is. We don't have the namespace fixed up on the personservice.cs, and so this is not being recognized, nor can it be recognized. Let's go back to that personservice.cs. Notice that it's got code first namespace, and we want it to share a namespace with the rest of our program, which is OData test. So I'm going to go to personservice.cs, change the namespace to OData test. While I'm here, we want to change the class name as well. Okay, great. Person context, and we will let that rename it across the board to person context and save that file. That allows us to come back here. Okay, now we're all set. Person context, because they're in the same namespace, it doesn't know what it is, so that's all set. The next thing we need is a data service collection of person. So let's do that and call that people. And for that, we're going to add System Data Services Client. Okay, so this data service collection of person, that is defined as part of the WCF data service framework. Now, there's a couple steps necessary for loading the data, and that data has to be loaded asynchronously. The first thing we have to do is take people, this data service collection, and initialize it. So let's go ahead and do that in the constructor, and we pass in the context into the initialization. That now causes our data service collection to be initialized, and we can load that asynchronously by passing in once again the person test data service, but this time appending slash people. Right. You want to talk for a minute about what that is about, why Sure. we're using that URI?
Yeah, well, our service exposes several could expose several different feeds. In this case, we just have a list of people, but if you go to personTestDataService.svc, that'll give a list of here are the different entities you can get at, and then to drill into one of those, you give that name. So that's people there.
Great. So that is going to load asynchronously, and in fact, when it's done loading, we're going to have the contents that we need. There's no need for any additional callback because at this point, at the point where it is completed, we will have all the data we need. So we could run this right now. We would get read-only. We would not be able to do any updates, but we should see the data come in.
So that's really cool. You do have the option of having a callback event where you can handle the load async, and you can, you know, update your, you can say, you know, data loaded or whatever. You can do something there if you need to, but because we're binding directly to that data service collection in our XAML, we've set it. Now, don't we need to also set the data context to that people?
Yes, we do. You're absolutely right.
Great. And so now, because it's bound to that, and as soon as the people.load async returns, then the binding is just all those iNotify property changed things that have generated for us inside that people, that data service collection. It's automatically going to inform the UI that it needs to update itself.
So should we run this now, or should we build the write back on the save before we run it?
I vote let's run it, just so we can see something actually working.
Brings up the phone emulator.
And one thing you've pointed out to me is that you want to keep the emulator running once it's started, because it's that loading thing is going to happen more quickly each time. So we saw there it took a second while it called back to the service, and then it did bind all that data and displayed it on the screen.
Correct. And because this is currently only reading the data, we haven't implemented the logic for writing the data. If I were to change one of these, make this to Jesse Lib and click save on that, while it is updating locally because we do have mode equal two-way, if I stop this, I stop debugging and then reload the data, we'll see that it has not been updated in the database. So let's bring back the emulator, and you can see that it did, while it updated locally because of the two-way binding, it did not work its way all the way back to the database. So that's our next step, is to get that saving all the way back to the database. So let's implement an event handler for save. I almost violated my own rule and closed the emulator there. Let's go ahead and say in the main, in the constructor, that save button on click will create an event handler for that. And in the click event handler, what we want to do is to take that context object and call begin save changes. Begin save changes is going to take the save changes option, and that is, what do you want to do with the save changes? Do you want to do batch saving or not? And so let's go to save change options, and you can see the enumeration, batch, continue on error. We're going to choose none. And here I think we want to express some thanks to Woody.
Yep, Chris Woodruff.
Well, I mean, yes, if you want to be formal, who pointed out we had been doing batch changes and pointed out that we're going to be a lot happier with the error reporting we get by not doing that. Mm-hmm. And then we can also put a callback method. I'm going to put on change saved as my callback method. And finally, we need the context. Okay? Okay, with that completed, we've got on save changes, which we have not created a method for, so let's go ahead and let it generate a, well, I don't want a property stub, let's go ahead and generate our own onSave changes callback method. I'm going to actually use a code snippet, drop that in completely, and then we can discuss it rather than having folks have to sit through my typing this out, because although it's slightly lengthy, it doesn't do anything extraordinary. What happens is that on this callback, we get an async result. We now have a Lambda statement here that we can say to the dispatcher, and we need to do this because we need to get to the UI thread. You can't write to the UI without using something that's going to get you back onto the UI thread, and the asynchronous callback here is not on the UI thread. If we tried to write to the UI directly from this thread, we'd throw an exception. So we're going to use the dispatcher call begin invoke, and then one way to read this Lambda expression is as if this were the parameters being passed in, that is nothing, and now we've got the body of the method that we're essentially calling through this delegate, and what we're saying here is set the context to use the result iasync result object, get its async state as a person context, and now we can go ahead and try to call our method write operation response. We don't have write operation response yet, so let me drop that in as well. I know that we're adding a little bit of complexity, but this is really just housekeeping. What write operation response does is it takes a data service response and formulates the message for whether this was updated or not and shows it in a message box.
You know, so this is just... And this is all just stuff that we use because we wanted to see something explicit on our phone client. I mean, it's some of it really to get the message information back is more just kind of, like you're saying, it's housekeeping and it's debugging. So really, you could call begin save changes, and I don't believe we would have even needed to have a callback there, right? I think we could.
No, that's entirely a convenience method so that we can see some result right away, knowing that the callback, that the write either succeeded or failed.
Right.
Okay, let's go ahead and run this, and we should now see that in addition to the ability to update it locally, that we can write that all the way back to the database. So let's bring up that emulator again. And my emulator does a funny thing. After the first time I run it, if I don't close it, it just hides on my tray, so I need to bring it up. Okay, here is the data. And this time, when we go in and we change the last name to LIB, we should see that when I click on save, that we get a confirmation that, yep, in fact, code 204 indicates that everything went as expected. Mm-hmm. And we saw last time it still said Jesse Lib until we restarted. This time I'm going to stop debugging and restart, and my expectation is that was written all the way back to the database, and so the data that's going to show up now, in fact, is that modified data.
And another way to demonstrate that is if you go back to your browser window.
Yes, what I'm going to do is change it again and do that. So let's change Bobby Smith. And one thing I can do is rather than fussing with the keyboard here, I can indicate to the emulator that I have an external keyboard by hitting my break key. And now I can use my keyboard, my actual computer keyboard, and put in anything I like. So let's go ahead and put in a new name. Click Save for that. And now we can go back to the browser, which is what I think you were saying.
Right.
And update the browser. And we see that those updates are, in fact, reflected and in the database.
Great.
Okay, so just to summarize, what we did here was we went to odata.codeplex.com, obtained that zip file, unzipped it, and in there was data service util as well as the DLL that we needed inside our new project. We created a Windows Phone project, set the bindings for two-way binding, and were able to update the list, but then to write that back to the data service itself through the proxy, we needed to get the context. We loaded our data asynchronously, and then when it was time to save that data, we were able to do so by calling on the context begin save changes and optionally pass in a method to be called on completion of that asynchronous event, which allowed us to get the codes to indicating whether we were successful or not.
Right.
So that was easy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, we've gone through things kind of in detail, so it really is pretty simple when you see it in context. We've got the code for all this written up on our blogs, and you can see everything that we've done here. You can follow along with that on the blog post, and you can also download the code. But yeah, really, there's moving parts to be hooked up, but actually very, very little code.
It is on the one hand, I mean, it's totally honest to say that it is fairly simple to do. I think the missing part in that sentence is the second time.
Yeah.
The first time is a little tricky.
Right. I mean, there's definitely, there are a lot of different things, you know. There's changes in the XAML, there's the plumbing code in the client proxy, there's plumbing code in the service, there's that little trick that we ran into with, in order for it to be write, to allow writing back to the service, it needed to implement an object context. There's a bunch of little tricks to it, but exactly as you're saying, it's easy to do the second time.
Great. Well, that, I think, wraps this one, so we're ready to go on and take this approach and roll it now back into our real server and our real client.
Great.
Okay, for Microsoft, this is Jesse Liberty.
And this is John Galloway.
Take care.